It took thousands of years for the guitar to evolve from the humble four-string oud into the sophisticated electric Kramer that Eddie Van Halen plays. Some form of guitar appears in most cultures all over the world. The Scandinavian lute that Gunnar plays with his toes as he lay dying in a snake pit. The 11-stringed Spanish vihuela. But for Americans, we've made the instrument our own in a certain sense. Robert Johnson, Les Paul, Jimi Hendrix. They've all fueled this passion for the six strings and fretboard, a love affair that you can actually indulge right now at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. The exhibit is called Guitar Heroes, and it features some 65 guitars from all eras of the instrument's evolution. And joining us now is Jason Kerr-Dobney. He's the associate curator of the Met's Department of Musical Instruments, and also Vernon Reed, founder of the seminal hard rock band Living Color. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Vernon, I got to ask you, I mean, this exhibit is right up your alley. What's the one instrument that you were most excited to see on display?
Probably, and I don't know if they're showing it, but if they have Jimi Hendrix's guitar that was burnt. I don't know if they have that one. Do you have that one in the exhibit? There was the guitar that Jimi Hendrix burned at the Monterey Pop Festival that Frank Zappa recovered.
Well, it's a really great example of the way that guitars have actually been part of not just musical history, but American history. And Jason, that's kind of what the exhibit is meant to demonstrate, right? How the guitar has sort of been there, present in a lot of historical moments in the United States.
Well, the exhibition is about acoustic guitars that were built here in New York City by Italian-American craftsmen. So they're called archtop guitars. And although usually used for jazz, they're most famously used for that, they really crossed genres. So we have guitars by a whole host of players in the exhibition.
And you have violins in the exhibition. Why is that?
Well, because the archtop guitar that's made here in New York by John D'Angelico, James DeQuisto, and the living maker, John Monteleone, owes some of its construction techniques, including its carved arched top, to the construction of a violin.
We should remind people that visually the arched top refers to the curving in the front, which is like a violin, and the two sort of F-holes, or in some of the guitars in your exhibit, they're actually more elaborate than that. The sound holes are more like a violin than the traditional round hole in the center that we're familiar with.
That's exactly right.
All right, so Vernon, I mean, to a certain extent, guitars are a little bit like baseball. Nobody can really agree on the origin of the guitar or who was responsible for it or what country they came from. But can we kind of agree on what are the right guitars to play for certain kinds of music? Is that established?
I don't even think that's established because, you know, you'll have, take someone like Ted Nugent. Ted Nugent plays a Birdland, which is a guitar normally associated with jazz, and he doesn't play jazz on it. So different people, it's really what happens when the guitar you happen to be playing gets into your hands and what happens, you know, when that contact is made. So I would be generally I would say for certain kinds of music, the solid body electric guitar, the louder the music is, the solid body is more appropriate, but people have done all kinds of things with all kinds of instruments.
Okay, but, you know, a lot of people would associate the sound of the hollow body Gibson, Lucille, with the kind of blues the blues that we heard coming out of Detroit from B.B. King. And a lot of people would associate this particular sound with rock and roll. So Jason, a lot of people come to this guitar exhibit having really different ideas about what the guitar sounds like. What's the sound of the archbody guitars that you're displaying there at the Met?
Oh, sure. Well, the earliest ones were used like in swing bands for rhythm guitar playing, and they were played acoustically, and these guitars were popular because they could cut through sort of the early jazz ensembles through the horn sections and really give that punch that was needed to drive the music rhythmically. But then later on, when electronic amplification came in, these great guitars were much smoother sound. They were like the great club scenes that you might hear like on 52nd Street with all those great players right here in New York City.
But that's not at all necessarily what your exhibit is limited to. Take a listen to this. That is the sound of a lute playing a piece by John Dowland. It was a piece from the Renaissance. I mean, the whole beauty of the guitar, Vernon Reed, is that it's portable. It's like having a piano, all the range of a piano, but you can hold it in your hands and sling it across your back and carry it with you.
Absolutely. And also the thing about the guitar is that it's also kind of a fetish object. You know, they're like a canvas that, with a really skilled craftsman, it becomes a kind of art, the art of luthiering. Guitars have been painted on. They've had all kinds of inlay through time. Different materials have been used. So it's also a kind of sculpture that you play, make music with.
Well, you know, I got to ask you, Vernon Reid. Eric Clapton's personal guitar collection was auctioned off, and some of these guitars went for $30,000-$40,000. Would you pay that much for a guitar?
I don't know. I have a kind of internal financial body clock that says maybe that's a little too much.
It's called a bank account.
but the thing about instruments, they carry. You know, when a well-known player is associated with an instrument, it becomes an object of myth. And so, at that point, guitars of a certain era, if they were owned by an Eric Clapton or a Carlos Santana or a Jimi Hendrix, they have another, a whole other aura attached to them. You know, whether the instrument itself is a fine instrument or not, sometimes they're really fine, and sometimes not so much. But they really, like as I said before, they do become fetish objects.
But Jason Kurdovny of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, those Stradivarius are probably outpriced the Clapton guitars by quite a bit.
Well, that's probably true. The Stradivarius have been around for hundreds of years and are still usable, and there's a much more limited quantity of them. I think a lot of the 20th century guitars are still being made. They're still being used. Some of them are factory produced. I think that affects the value a lot.
All right. The exhibit is called Guitar Heroes.
Beautiful
Jason.
Exhibit.
Yeah,
absolutely
it really
gorgeous.
Is. You can take a look at it on the web, actually. They have some great interviews with guitar players as well. Jason Kurdovny, Associate Curator in the Department of Musical Instruments at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and Vernon Reid, founder of the seminal hard rock band Living Color. Thanks, guys.
Continuing now with our conversation, I actually saw that exhibit at the Metropolitan.
Oh, you went
Museum.
To go see it?
Yeah,
I've only
great.
Seen it on the web.
You know, we're going to have a conversation actually shortly with James Glick about the idea of information actually explaining virtually all of science. We're so used to thinking of science and technology as about the making of things, that somehow they're out there. But when you look at these exhibits, it actually occurred to me when you were talking, you know, these came from the mind of these Italian makers. And they imagined the sounds that they would make by sort of mapping what they had in their minds onto these elaborate sorts of woodworking tools that you can see at the exhibit,
yeah,
how these things were made. And then, you know, when they're plucked for the first time, it's as though the information goes from the mind through the crafts, through the glue, through the wood, and then comes back to your ears. It's an amazing thing.
And yet,
thing.
Just like science, there's this element of chance in the making of these instruments. We don't entirely know what makes a Stradivarius sound so much differently than other violins, although just the wood itself, what the history of that wood, what beetles crawled through underneath the bark of that tree, whether how much moisture it got in the weather that it was, that makes a difference.
And the Guarnaris and the Stradivarii were made for individual players in many, many cases, and these were made for individual players as well. And Les Paul made instruments for himself. So this guitar is an information story because what you're hearing is not only some sort of in unclear resonance from the solid body electric guitar of a
right.
Les Paul. You're also hearing the individual sort of resonance that comes from those pickups, the magnetic pickups.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, each guitar, each player, I mean, that sound of the high strings of Robert Johnson playing those, I mean, you need some seriously tough fingers to play something that Robert Johnson played.
And Johnson was an acoustic guitar player.
Absolutely. Literally carrying his keyboard on his back, or the sound of Lucille from B.B. King, or of course,
Lucille was an electric
Gibson guitar, right. Of course. And then Jimi Hendrix. I mean, people listen to Jimi Hendrix, and it's just unmistakable.
And it's an information story, not to be too wonky about it. When you hear that sound, that particular configuration of sound, it's not a set of, you know, magnetic resonances. That's the Hendrix sound.
Absolutely. I mean, he played a Fender Stratocaster, right?
Strat.
Yeah.
And with a certain kind of distortion through a tube amp.
Yeah.
Which now is simulated by solid-state amps, which actually simulate, again, mapping an old sound onto a new sort of electronic platform. And then, you know, sending it out on now MP3 files, which are...
You keep bringing it back to, you know, the science of it, and I always want to go straight to the mystical, indefinable
things. They're both. They're together.
They're both there.
They're
indistinguishable. You can't get away from them. And you know what? When you get it right, it lasts for generations and generations. I mean, there you've got Jimi Hendrix.
Even when you get it wrong.
Well, hopefully that doesn't last.
What about ABBA?
Yeah. I am not going there, but I will go to Bach.
Bach wrote an enormous amount of lute music. He's played on lute here, yeah.
He did. This is one of his bourrées. I mean, talk about getting it right.
Yeah. Well, the acoustic guitars at the Metropolitan Museum of Art are part of an exhibit called Guitar Heroes we were just talking about. Coming up, we're going to talk with James Glick about information, a theory, a flood. Information is perhaps the biggest story in science.
You can see a slideshow of some of the guitars that are on display at the Met right now. Just head over to our website at thetakeaway.org.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.